I'm correspondent Tom Wilmer. Come along and join me for a visit with Becky Stucchetti, executive director of the Hawaii International Film Festival, as she shares Canadian filmmakers' connection with the festival, from Shogun to the Getting Lost TV series documentary. Canadian connection with Hawaii International Film Festival.
Yeah, I think there's like really incredible programs in Canada for the film community there, and it is absolutely a place that we emulate here in Hawaii in more ways than one. You see the type of support that the entire arts community and the film community specifically gets. The National Film Board of Canada, there are festivals all across the country. They really support independent film and all different types of film in Canada. And then you have the Toronto International Film Festival, which is, you know, one of the top in the world. We at HIF have absolutely used Toronto as sort of a roadmap for what we're trying to do in the Pacific region. So how can HIF be the festival to attend in the Pacific region to launch your career, to network, to meet people from all over the region? And that's really a role model for us at HIF. And I think we've gotten closer to doing that over the last number of years, and hopefully we continue to grow. And then Canadian films, we absolutely love seeing Canadian films at HIF. There is a strong Indigenous Canadian program. You know, Indigenous film is a specific showcase at HIF that we try and support in a lot of ways. And then you have just incredible, really creative independent films coming out of Canada all the time. A couple of years ago, there was a film called Night Raiders that was a co-production between New Zealand and Canada. It played at Toronto, and we played it at HIF and had a number of people attend as well. It was really exciting. And this year, obviously, Shogun. We had a huge spotlight on Shogun. The co-creators live on Maui, and it's a Hawaii celebration, the success of Shogun. But then, of course, it was a co-production with Canada as well, and it's really, really exciting to see more co-productions like that happen on a global scale. A couple other films from Canada that we were able to show as part of HIF 44. One is The Motherlode as part of our New American Perspectives program, and this was a really beautiful film, co-produced America and Canada, as well as Vietnam. Our New Americans Perspective program is looking at foreign-born filmmakers here in Hawaii, and that's supported by the Vilcek Foundation. And it's a really, really amazing program with filmmakers from all over the world who also reside in the United States, looking at sort of the conversations around immigration in the United States that have been happening, and then highlighting the work that's coming out of that community. We also had this beautiful film as part of our Kaukohoku Award program called Universal Language. And this was a very competitive film with our Kaukohoku jury this year, and that's by Matthew Rankin. It was a hit at the 2024 Cannes Film Festival, again produced in Canada, and just absolutely a favorite film as part of HIF 44. The audience has really, really loved this project. It's a big focus on Quebecois and explores all different types of relationships in a really beautiful comedic magical realism scope. And then we also have the film Yinta, which again was an Indigenous program but was also nominated for a Kaukohoku Award. This was a documentary about the fight for sovereignty that is happening with the oil pipelines, and is something that resonates a lot with all viewers across the United States, because we have many of the similar conversations, not necessarily in Hawaii with an oil pipeline, but you know, this idea of at least story sovereignty, if not national sovereignty, working as a part of the countries that you're in.
We'll then meet up with Rachel Kondo and Justin Marks, co-writers and producers of the FX television series Shogun, recipient of 18 Emmy Awards and 25 Emmy nominations, including Outstanding Drama Series. Marks and Kondo share fascinating insights about on-location filming in Burnaby, British Columbia, where they created a mammoth set replicating Osaka, Japan in 1600. The series included on-location filming in British Columbia for 10 months, from the fall of 2021 through the spring of 2022, from Waya Point on Vancouver Island to Manati Bay on Howe Sound, to Vancouver with a huge harbor set in Port Moody. Previous to the September Gala Award ceremony at the Hawaii International Film Festival, Shogun had already made history with 14 Creative Arts Emmy wins the previous weekend, the most by a show in a single season. Shogun practically swept all technical categories, with episode-specific wins for outstanding cinema photography, visual and sound editing, period costumes, hairstyling, and makeup. It also won overall Creative Arts Emmys for main title design, outstanding casting for a drama series, and outstanding short-form nonfiction or reality series for the making of Shogun. Kondo and Marks were also the recipient of Hawaii International Film Festival's 2024 Career Achievement Award. The Hollywood Reporter noted that the award recognition is a major moment for Asian representation and non-English language television. Shogun is the very first majority non-English language series to win in the Outstanding Drama Series category. Kondo is a nationally recognized fiction writer, while Marks is a veteran television and film writer, with credits that include an Oscar nomination for co-writing Top Gun: Maverick.
There was a lot of archival research that took place, yeah.
Oh, yes. Slight understatement.
Yeah.
It was months and months and months and tons of consultants and historians and researchers and movement advisors and on and on and on. Obi tires.
Set building, creating Japan for the filming.
Well, it was very much a journey for us to build these incredibly detailed sets that we used on our show. We had 300,000 square feet of stage space in Burnaby where we were shooting our interiors, and it allowed us to build the ceremonial meeting hall from Osaka Castle, gardens outside, and that gave, I think, a certain sense of tangibility to our actors, where in this day and age, anything that's more than 50 feet away from an actor in television, we usually just want to build that in computers and call it a day. But now they could actually walk these hallways, look onto views that they knew they were looking onto, and took inspiration for their performance. And that, you know, made the world feel complete. And it was very important to us to do that. But it took a long time to get it right. And we never ultimately, I think, in the end, got it perfect. You know, it was always just that journey and that compromise that you're making for production to sort of still finish sets and all that. But the good news is that those are only things that we know and we hold on to, and we'll do better next time.
Let's talk a moment about language. We talked earlier today about contextually. The Bible, you know, King James Version, was written to be super contemporary when it came out, cutting edge. So you have to go back in time and create this vernacular that doesn't exist anymore.
No, and we needed to recreate it in a way that was different. You know, neither Rachel nor I speak Japanese, so to our ears, it's hard for us to be judges of it, but we had Japanese producers and crew who do, and Hiro, our star producer, was really running point on it when it came to understanding, I want this to feel like Jidaige, the language that would be used in that period, and there are conventions in Japanese filmmaking to express that language, but it was very important to him also that this show reach a younger audience in Japan, which meant that they would find modern ways into certain scenes where the language wasn't as austere and Shakespearean as it might have otherwise been, which also worked for us because that Shakespearean Japanese that they would use in those period pieces was also quite verbose, and I wanted it to be short and punchy and to hit, even in English, to sort of feel like it was a staccato rhythm. So it worked out for the show very well.
Really cool. Another thing that you guys made me think of is contextually, you and I were right now in Hawaii, You have old people living in Canada. You have Americans that watched your shows. But there's a myopism in us as Westerners, and you have to remind yourself that the center of the cosmos was China for a long time, and as was Japan in their culture. So did your series play in Japan, and how was it received, and was it embraced?
Yeah, I think one of my favorite moments in the show was this moment in the first episode where both Blackthorn and Omi on the Japanese side are separately and simultaneously calling each other barbarians and savages. You know, that there's this sense of each of them had a myopic worldview, and both of them were finding it colliding at that same time.
Did you hear of any epiphanous moments among the Japanese people who watched the series?
I think back to when we were doing press in Japan. This is prior to the series coming out. Some of the Japanese press folk, they had seen the series, and they were very surprised to fall into the story, and they were very, very complimentary of all the efforts on Sanada-san's part. And one of the journalists said to me, it's not that people in the West always get it wrong, it's that the pile-up of errors is so distracting that we can't get to the story. We can't allow ourselves, it's just, it feels completely wrong.
But you guys went to extraordinary lengths to filter out a lot of those cultural disconnects, correct?
I would say Justin went to extraordinary lengths to invite the right people in, including, first and foremost, Hiroyuki Sanada, to tell us in their lengthy careers what have we gotten wrong and how can we do better.
Interesting.
I think it was just important to us that manners are very important when you're dealing with an exchange of cultures, and first impressions are very important with good manners. And if we weren't going to set that tone among our production, that we're here to try to get everything right, and we will fail, but that is what we're trying to do, I think, you know, you're starting off on the wrong foot. We like to say, you know, we ask nothing of our production of the various departments that we didn't also subject ourselves to in the writing of the show when it came to trying to get it right for a change. And everyone really just took that mantle and ran with it. And it was really exciting to watch and inspiring.
Did you guys make trips to Japan, research trips? And if so, what did you focus on?
We actually recently went to Japan. It was our first time back in quite a while. Obviously, COVID kind of was the grand disincentive to going. We spent about 10 days. We went to Tokyo, Kyoto, Osaka, and we visited as many castles. We went to every exhibit and sword viewing and sake sampling that we could possibly get our hands on, and it was absolutely enlivening to be there. I feel like we felt the spirit of season two, what we wanted to capture, kind of come together on that trip, and now we're kind of trying to write to that as a room.
Before we go, one more thing. Looking forward, you guys are working on a new season.
Okay.
Yeah. Talk to us about that. Give us a teaser.
You know, we don't have a book to go off of anymore, but what we do have is history. And that's what the book did. It's part of the story, and now we just are going to take that torch and move it into the next few years of Japanese history with these characters who we know and love. So we're very excited to do it.
And the other thing we're bringing into season two is a certain comfort level with creative chaos. Because we've been there before.
And one more real quick one. I know we're out of time. Your handler's yanking us up. You alluded earlier about COVID being some positive dynamic of that time.
Yeah, without it, we would not have had this sort of virtual interface that allowed for people who live far, far, far away from Vancouver to participate in the show. And that made all the difference.
To learn more, where would we go?
Justin Marks, and if you want to learn more on Shogun, you can see it on Hulu. It's there streaming now, and we're very excited for new audiences to come to it.
My name is Rachel Kondo, and I do know that FX has put together an incredible website to dig deeper into the history and the research on the show. So,
thank you guys. This is
great.
Thank
you, Tom.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Loved it. I'm your host, Tom Wilmer.
Now let's join Getting Lost Documentaries director Taylor Morden and producer Emily Clare for the inside story of the documentary Getting Lost. It was September 22, 2004, 20 years ago, when the ABC network first aired the pilot episode of Lost. 2 decades since the groundbreaking series first captivated audiences with its blend of mystery, sci-fi, and human drama, Lost redefined television storytelling with its non-linear narrative and intricate plot twists. Set on a mysterious island after a plane crash, the show explored themes of fate, survival, and redemption, while weaving in supernatural elements that kept viewers theorizing until the very end. 2 decades later, Lost continues to be celebrated for its daring creativity, its emotional depth, and its ability to keep audiences hooked, even as they rewatch and reconsider the show's many unanswered questions. From 2004 through 2010, the North Shore of Oahu was a stand-in location for a mysterious island that was a pivotal point of the episodic sci-fi television series. Lost was an Emmy-winning number one network show that introduced audiences to serialized science fiction storytelling and paved the way for higher budget and shorter seasons of today's television. Director Taylor Morden says the last blockbuster, Getting Lost, is the definitive retrospective on the show and its lasting impact on the cast, crew, and fan community. He says Losties will be enthralled by this documentary that tells how a hastily greenlit ABC pilot put into motion one of television's most groundbreaking series. The good, the bad, the hotly debated, it's all revealed in the documentary Getting Lost through interviews with creators, writers, cast members, local production staff, and background actors. Come along and join the conversation.
Hi, I'm Taylor Morden, and I was the director of the upcoming documentary Getting Lost about the TV show Lost.
And I'm Emily Clare, a producer on Getting Lost.
I got lost up on North Shore when you guys were filming.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm walking along the beach and see smoke coming out of the jungle.
There you go.
And when I'm there.
Yeah. We're super happy to be here in Hawaii showing the film to a Hawaiian audience because we filmed a lot of it here because that's where they shot Lost 20 years ago.
Mostly North Shore.
Mostly North Shore. Every time they needed a downtown location, they were here in Honolulu.
So what are you focusing on, the revisiting Lost?
It's a lot. We talk with the cast and crew and the creatives behind it about the making of the show and looking back on the 20-year legacy of it. But it's a lot about the fan community and the people that it brought together, because it was one of the first shows that people came together and did podcasts and had message boards, and the internet was just coming of age with social media when the show came out. So there's all these people that we talked to that met their spouses and have kids because of a TV show. So it's really about the human connection that came up around the show.
It's interesting when you think back, it's one of those first shows that was really cryptic.
Yeah.
In so many ways.
Yeah. Yeah, it was one of the first serialized mystery shows on network television, and it was groundbreaking at the time because you couldn't go back, you know, and stream it or binge it. You had to watch every week or you missed it.
Isn't it amazing how quickly our whole world changes?
The whole world changed, yeah, and it's such a moment in time, and that's why I wanted to do a documentary about Lost, is because there was never a show like that before it, and there's never going to be another show like it because technology has changed so much.
Did you guys kind of dream this up on your own, or were you prompted?
We're big fans of the show, and so I'm a documentary filmmaker. This is my 6th film, but I've been wanting to do a Lost documentary for 10 years, but it was too soon. And we decided to do it this year because it's the 20th anniversary of the premiere of Lost.
Amazing. 20 years.
Yeah.
Seems like yesterday.
It really does. Yeah. Your friend, I'm sorry, what was your name?
Teddy.
Teddy mentioned that you're also doing a podcast for Canada.
Canadian Geographic.
Yeah.
And they have a podcast called Here and There with Liz Beatty, and I'm an associate producer for her.
Oh, very cool.
And that's, I'm glad you brought it up. That's why we're talking.
Yeah.
Is the Canadian angle.
Yeah, so Evangeline Lilly, a star of Lost, is in our movie. She's from Vancouver. And also, we're a small independent documentary, but we're playing in theaters all across Canada for 2 days in November. And it's a huge opportunity for an independent film to be playing nationwide in Canada on November 3rd and November 6th through Cineplex.
How will somebody search it, find it?
Getting Lost.
You got to get lost to find it.
You got to get lost to find it, yeah.
That's really cool. You guys have a website, or how would somebody follow you?
Yeah, gettinglostdoc.com, and we're at gettinglostdoc on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, wherever, TikTok, every place.
So just search Getting Lost.
Search Getting Lost, yeah.
And once again, your name?
Taylor Morden, director of Getting Lost.
And Emily Clare, producer of Getting Lost.
I love it. I'll see you there, wherever that is. I'm your host, Tom Wilmer. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Thank you so much.
Great impromptu little chat.
Yeah.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, iTunes, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com.
This is Roseanne Cash, and I'm sitting here with Tom Wilmer. Please support your local NPR station. I listen to WNYC in New York. In fact, NPR is all I listen to. If I didn't have NPR, I would feel like my lifeline to the world has been cut. So, yes, please support your local NPR station.